Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, every Monday you can tune in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. And, of course, our number at the clinic, 1-855-6-VERITAS. We talk about integrative holistic medicine and, of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, all about that. Good morning, Dr. Edwards. Glad to have you back on the show.
Good morning, Wade. How are you today?
I'm doing well, doing well. So you have a special guest on today's program.
We do. I'm happy to introduce Dr. Dan Pompa. He's one of the many integrative practitioners that have helped to train me into this new holistic integrative, or I just call it good medicine.
Right.
Get to the root of the problem. So let's get right into it. Dr. Pompa completed his undergraduate education at the University of Pittsburgh in 1988. He earned his doctorate of chiropractic degree at the Life University College of Chiropractic in Marietta, Georgia in 1995. Graduated second in his class there. He had to start a journey on his own back to health because of a debilitating battle with chronic fatigue syndrome, and that led him to this voracious, passionate search and research for root causes of problems. He and his wife, Marilee, live in Park City, Utah, with their 5 kids now. They love to bike and ski and hike and enjoy life. But Dr. Pompa specifically teaches practitioners around the world, doctors around the world, how to heal the cell. The Cellular Healing Diet is one book he's published. The 5 R's is a philosophy he uses to heal the cell, and we talk about that all the time here on the radio. If you're sick today in America, it's most likely because your mitochondria is sick, your cell is sick. It's not your genes, it's the environment outside the genes. So that's why I love Dr. Pompa. He gets to the root of the problem. He addresses cellular health. He uses nutrients and detoxification to do this, amongst other things. So, Dr. Pompa, welcome to our show. Thanks for joining us and enlightening me and our listeners today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Well, Dr. Pompa, I'd like to start, folks, on you're a little different. A lot of the physicians that we interview or conventionally trained like I was and then made a transition into integrative functional or holistic medicine, and usually it was because of some personal illness.
Yeah.
However, chiropractors are trained already in the mindset of the body will heal itself if you just remove the impedance, specifically, spinal impedances, nerve impedances, but you take it further than that because of your own personal illness, I think, led you there to look at, chemical subluxation, I've heard you say. But I like our docs to kind of tell their personal story, tell how you got out of doing kind of the regular conventional chiropractic and looking deeper, going deeper. What triggered you and made you have to look deeper for a root cause in your personal life?
Yeah, life was going along pretty good. We just had 2 young babies and I had a thriving practice. And as you said, the bottom fell out and I didn't know what happened. It started with just general fatigue. So I thought I was overtraining. I'd have to say I was, in some of the best shape of my life. I was racing bikes at the time. And like most good athletes, you say, okay, I could be overtraining. And I would cut back my training or even took off the bike for 2 weeks at one point. And it didn't help. I would come back and, things were actually getting worse, not better. It went from fatigue to insomnia, from insomnia to panic attacks, and it basically became intolerant and allergic to every food I was eating. Major headaches. Just my adrenals were shot. I couldn't even adapt to normal stress, like even loud noise. My children would cry, and I just couldn't handle it. My wife would literally have to take them out of the house. That is even a fraction of the bizarre and unexplainable symptoms that I developed. And, I just, like most people listening, I was searching for answers. I was running a lot of tests, and they were coming back negative. And because I looked healthy and my tests were negative, I'm sure I got the same comments most listening that were in this position got, right? It must be in your head.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you start to believe it, right? Maybe I'm just crazy. I remember saying that to my wife. Maybe I'm just losing it here. You know, and she reminded me, look, you're not, you were normal and now. So I spent a lot of time looking for answers, and, I came across at one point something called Mad Hatter's disease. And for your listeners, if you recall what that is, it's the people making felt hats. They started getting a certain set of symptoms that made them known as Mad Hatters. So I said, gosh, I'm a Mad Hatter. I have all these, you know, from the anxiety to the, you know, unexplained rage and, you know, the emotional components to it. And I said, this is me. And so looking deeper, they got poisoned because they were using mercury to attenuate molds, et cetera, when they were making the felt hats. And they became acutely mercury poisoned. So I got a mercury test. I even went to the head of toxicology at one of the leading hospitals, and he said, yeah, it does seem like it could be that. So they ran a blood test, unfortunately, and came back negative. And, you know, I was disappointed, obviously. It was probably about a year or so later. I was working with a very bright endocrinologist, and he said to me, you know, Dan, I think you have mercury toxicity. And I said, oh, yeah, I thought so, too. And I did a blood test. He said, you know what, wrong test. That would show if you had acute mercury poisoning but not chronic. Do this test. And he explained how to do a challenge test and challenging out the metal out of the tissue. And I did it, and there it showed up. And so then I asked the logical question, what do you think I got? He said, do you have any dental work done around the time this happened? I said, I may have, because I had these two gold crowns put in, and they took out two silver fillings, which contain 50% mercury, right. Called an amalgam filling. And so I called my good friend who did the work, and sure enough, it was just days after I had that done that some of the symptoms started, just the fatigue, et cetera. I just never correlated it.
Right.
So I researched on how to get the rest out right, and more importantly, how to get it out of my brain. Because, you know, when I was sick, my adrenals were shot, my thyroid was, you know, shot, even though my blood work was normal. But every time I would try to address those things, I mean, some things would get better, but ultimately it didn't work, and I'd even create new symptoms oftentimes. So the adrenals and the thyroid were too far downstream. I knew it was in my pituitary hypothalamus. I knew it was the feedback mechanism that was broke. I just couldn't figure out what was going on. And so this gave me an understanding, because when you look at studies on silver fillings, most of it accumulates in the brain, in particular the hypothalamus pituitary, which controls your thyroid and your adrenals. So, you know, therein lied my answer and my solution and a lot of what I teach today. It really came out of a lot of that research.
Well, that's a fascinating story, and I want to clarify, when you said you were working out, you're in the best shape of your life, I'm assuming you're eating fairly decent, probably not as, you know, ketogenic intermittent fasting like you preach now, but eating fairly clean, under chiropractic care, kind of doing all the healthy, quote-unquote healthy things, right?
Yeah, you're right, Doc. I was. I mean, I was doing more than most.
Yeah, and then on top of that, you were trying to address thyroid, adrenal, I'm assuming with some supplements and vitamins and whatnot. And even that wasn't working. And that's where we find a lot of our patients is they're doing so many things right, but there's this missing piece of the puzzle, and oftentimes it's a toxicity issue. And, of course, the mouth is a prime candidate because of these amalgam fillings. Talk a little more about what you've learned about amalgams. Why do the dentists not understand this? Why do patients get pushback from dentists, in your opinion?
Look, they're trained like you were and like I was with a certain dogma, right? I mean, our profession tells us things, and at a certain point, we're being educated by them. We just believe it, and nor do we have time to look into it, right? So we take it for what it is and go on with that belief. And that's what it is. That's what happened in dentistry. I just had this conversation with somebody yesterday. I said, look, she said, my dentist said that these fillings, you know, are inert, blah, 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 you know, and I said, yeah, that's what he's been told. I said, you know, don't hold it against him. He hasn't had time to look into it, and he's basically repeating you know, what he's heard. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you just kind of take it at face value. But I believe this. If any dentist really dug deep, they would come out with a different understanding. You know, I had taken, you know, the dentist who took out mine incorrectly. He was still putting amalgam in and taking them out just randomly, I would say. I brought him a bunch of literature. And I said, Derek, you know, I want you to look into this. And it was several inches thick. And it was over a year. And then he invited my wife and I out to dinner. And at that time, I didn't know. And so we went out. And he started the conversation by saying, first of all, I owe you an apology. You know, I finally looked at that information you brought me. And I was stunned at the studies. I was stunned at what, you know, all of it said. And frankly, my first reaction was guilt. Second, because of, you know, what I've done. Second was anger. You know, and then I thought of you. And then I realized, you know, how many people I took amalgams out had come in and said these things are, you know, happened, and I just really never put two and two together.
Yeah.
He changed his practice. So, you know, I believe that every dentist that would really look into it would come across with a different view.
Yeah. So talk a little more about, you said you researched the right way to take them out. Talk a little bit about what you mean, the wrong way and the right way to take these things out, and then what you do after that, even after you've taken them out.
I mean, you know, before they even go to the dentist, we put them into what we call prep phase, prepare their pathways that are going to be challenged. When you start drilling into a silver amalgam filling, it does contain 50% mercury, and it creates mercury vapor. I mean, listen, for the life of that filling, it produces mercury vapor. It goes right up into your brain. Now, again, that's not my opinion. That has been shown again and again. There was a study that was published in FASIB, one of the most prestigious scientific journals, that showed that the number of fillings in your mouth is proportional to how much they find in your brain and other organs like the liver. And there's one called the Duress study that, ladies, the number of fillings in your mouth is proportional on autopsies of how much they find in your baby's brain. So you can see that this is even an inherited problem. Mm. But, so we want to prepare these pathways that when you go drilling into a filling, you're vaporizing even more mercury, and it's vaporizing right up into the brain, into the hypothalamus pituitary, which controls your hormone system. Not a good idea. So we prepare that. And then once you get to the dentist, we take an agent that we call Bind, that if any goes into the gut, which no matter what, there's going to be some that goes into the gut. This is sitting in there that grabs any of the extra mercury that dumps into the gut, protect your gut. And we take that before and after the appointment. Now the dentist has to do some things to make sure it's done safely. A rubber dam to prevent anything from going into the gut is a big deal. Giving you fresh oxygen or air, your own breathing, so you're not breathing the mercury vapor, is huge. And even a filtration unit that creates what we call a negative air pressure. So it pulls from the patient. So it's literally something that sits there and pulls the mercury vapor away from you and the dentist. So that's a big one. Some people have negative ion units, filtration units that cause the mercury to drop out of the air. So filtrating the air, giving you fresh air, using a dam, you know, some other techniques, chunking it out as opposed to just drilling, using copious amounts of water to make sure it doesn't heat, because heat causes more mercury vapor. Even using compatibility tests so they don't put something in your mouth that your body has a chance to react to. It's called a Clifford's test. That's a great idea. So all of these, typically a biologically safe dentist does. And Hal Huggins was the leader in this years ago. I mean, thousands of people, patients, he took amalgams out. So he learned these things to do and not to do. And, you know, Hal Huggins took a lot of heat because he went against his board and, you know, really promoting how to do this safely. But the Huggins protocol is a very good protocol. He has a way of measuring the negative charge on a filling. You're supposed to take out, according to Huggins, the highest negative first. So, you know, there's some debate on that, but, you know, I think the big things are the fresh air. I think, you know, making sure you take a binding agent before and after, you know, filtrating the air around you. So those are the big ones.
Okay. Well, and I want to remind the listeners that they can look up dentists that have been trained in these methods. There's a website, iaomt.org. There's a lot of information there, a lot of education, but also there's some dentists that have been trained in the biological dentistry or holistic dentistry that know how to do this the right way, because you definitely want it done the right way, because Dr. Pompa said he had those drilled out inappropriately, and that's when the symptoms really hit him. You can still get these symptoms even with the fillings in your mouth without them being drilled out, just the accumulation, like Dr. Pompa said. There's the vapor coming off the fillings for the life of that filling. So even prior to having them drilled out, you can still get mercury toxicity. So you basically figured that out, started taking getting the mercury out of your brain appropriately through these protocols. How quickly until you notice some improvement? A lot of patients that we see, it, you know, they come back in a week, hey, I'm not better, this isn't it, this isn't working. Talk a little bit about the length of time it took for you to get what you would consider back to normal.
Yeah, you know, I want to put something out there, because I think a lot of people listening will say, well, I had my fillings out, maybe correctly, maybe incorrectly. Either way, you have inorganic mercury in your brain that will not come out until you do something to get it out correctly. You know, the vapor turns to inorganic mercury. So when you eat what they call organic mercury that you might find in fish, or ethyl mercury in flu shots, vaccination, those types of mercury will cross into the brain. And there then it turns to inorganic mercury where it's locked. So just getting your fillings out isn't enough. The key is getting the mercury out of the brain. Now, there's what I call a honeymoon period. Some people, and I just had this happen on a call just the other day, that, well, I got my fillings out and I felt actually much better. And that honeymoon period lasts about 6 to 9 months. And then symptoms start. And they never correlate it to, you know, the fillings. They just think it's something new. Other people get the fillings out and don't feel better at all. You know, either way, we have to deal with really the problem is that mercury bioaccumulates in the brain probably from the time you were in utero, because you got what was in your mom in your brain. And then we start getting our own fillings, our own vaccinations, our own exposures, and it's bioaccumulating in the nerve tissue in the brain. And that's really the magic. You have to get it to the brain.
Right.
We have a prep phase, we have a body phase, but ultimately the brain phase is how I got my life back and thousands of others now. I mean, that's the key. People don't feel well today. People have hormone disruption, anxiety, brain fog. You know, I can go down a long list of unexplainable symptoms. Even digestive problems that aren't clearing up. Really, it's the toxicity in the brain that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, and how long did it take you to start feeling some better or all the way better?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think when I got my fillings out, there was a certain level of anxiety that went away just getting the fillings out. And I think because I had something called galvanism, where I had that gold put in, and I still had silver fillings. So galvanism is when you have two opposing metals, and it acts like a battery. So what a battery is you have two metals, and that's in an acid. That's a battery, right? It creates electrical current. Well, the same thing's happening in your mouth. Your mouth is a perfect acid, and then you put maybe a metal from the filling, the silver filling, and then maybe a crown. You ever look at a crown, it has that metal around it, or maybe it's a brace, maybe it's a retainer, maybe it's a different filling like I had. But either way, you have two opposing metals creating that current. When that left, I felt like a lot of my anxiety went away. But so that was immediate. But a lot of the symptoms came as I got the mercury out of my brain. And that was, you know, I would say a year I looked back and said, oh, my gosh, you know, I was sleeping through most of my nights. After 2 years, I was probably sleeping through all of my nights. That major, major anxiety panic attacks went probably within the first 6 months. So, you know, my digestion fixed itself, you know, after a year. So I always like to say, look, this is years, not months, because one of my pet peeves is, oh, I detoxed mercury. Oh, how long did you do that for? Oh, I did about, you know, 3 or 4 cleanses, you know, in a few months. Yeah, I wish it were so simple. 30, 40 years, this stuff bioaccumulates in the brain. It's years, not months. That's why one of my goals that I teach the doctors that I teach is your job is to teach the person the process so they can do it long enough to where it actually matters. It's not about putting someone on a cleanse for a month or two. You have to, they have to learn the process. If they do, they'll get their life back.
That's awesome. I love that. Teach the patient. That's our goal at Veritas. Teach the patient so they can take care of themselves, be healthy, and go do what God made them to do.
Yeah.
I want to shift a little bit and talk about your 5 R's, healing the cell, what exactly that means, and how do you accomplish that. So tell the listeners a little bit about how you came to that revelation of healing the cell and the 5 R's.
Well, you know, when you look at detox, I think we see a lot of things around us. I think detox is in vogue right now. I think people realize they don't feel well because of toxicity, but yet the 10-day cleanse in every health food store, the, you know, cilantro, chlorella, the liver cleanse, I mean, we can go down the list. And I think those things serve a purpose. However, none of them are where real detox really has to occur to get well. And you said it at the top of the show. You have to fix the cell to get well. More specifically, you have to detox the cell to get well. And that's where my 5 R's comes in, because when we look at the cellular function that's really disrupted, the 5 R's have become a roadmap. I used it as a roadmap to teach doctors, this is what you need to do to fix the cell and ultimately get the cell doing what it should do, and that's getting rid of these toxins. So when we fix the cell membrane, when we upregulate the cellular energy and reestablish methylation, you know, that is, you know, really what's broken. That's real detox, however. So it's not a colon cleanse. If we don't get the cell doing these things, then you're never, ever going to get well, and it's not real detox. So real detox has to occur at the cell, and the 5 R's is that roadmap of what we need to do to fix the cell and to get the cell detoxing. That's where it came from.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to remind the listeners who maybe aren't aware, you know, when a cell is doing what it does, which a big part of what it does is produce energy, ATP is the fuel for your body, for the cell to do its work, for your body to just have energy to do what it needs to do. So to make energy, just like in the carburetor in your car, you got to have a fuel line bringing your fuel and an air line bringing your air, and the spark plug is your thyroid, and boom, combustion happens. You make energy, ATP. But there's byproducts in this reaction, just like in your vehicle. There's the exhaust that you've got to blow that exhaust off, and your body has pathways and mechanisms in place to get rid of the byproducts of energy production, and it's no problem. You do that, and that's fine. The more that your fuel is sugar, the dirtier your burn will be, the dirtier your exhaust will be. That's why we talk about eating fat for fuel. But then on top of that, so your body's well capable of detoxing itself, detoxing this exhaust out. But just imagine, you know, in your vehicle, if there are a whole lot of extra burden, extra toxicities from the environment on top of just your normal exhaust. And there, it's a matter of this accumulation of toxicities that it overwhelms the body, and specifically the mouth we've talked about, but even on the food, chemicals on the food. We've talked about the 10 American study that showed like 280 different toxins in the umbilical cord blood of a newborn baby, and this was early 2000, 2001, something like that. So there's no doubt there's this burden of chemical toxicity that we breathe, we drink, we sleep on, we absorb through the skin. You know, chlorine in our shower water absorbs, we breathe it in, and it just overwhelms us. And so that's what Dr. Pomp is talking about, and we're getting at. You can do so much right in this, in the wellness that we preach from an eating standpoint. But if, you know, Dr. Jack Wolfson was on a while back, and he said it simply, if they would have told me on the first day of medical school that all disease was from either a nutritional deficiency or a environmental toxicity, that's it. In a nutshell,
well,
that sets everything. And a lot of times we ignore that toxicity point. At least my patients, they want to focus on the diet so much. And you can get a lot done, obviously, with the diet. But when you are stuck, or even when you're not stuck, just from a preventative standpoint, you know, keeping that cell healthy and keeping these chemicals out of you are key. So,
I say this all the time. Once you get to this chronic level of sickness, the perfect diet won't get you well, but you won't get well without the perfect diet.
Yeah, exactly.
So part of what I teach, as you know, is a multi-therapeutic approach, that the cellular healing, the cellular detox, and a lot of these ancient healing strategies, you know, certain diets, ketosis, my cellular healing diet, fasting, intermittent fasting, and even something I feast famine cycles, I call diet variation, all play an important role. So it's not just diet. It's using specific strategies to create adaptation. But you put all that together, you know, and it's really that's the art, and that's the answer, and it's the magic, is the multi-therapeutic approach where you're getting to the cause. It's what nobody's doing, Doc, you know, and it's a shame, because you look at one side of medicine, and they're just throwing drugs at symptoms, and they're stuck in a system. So I'm not pointing fingers or blaming. It's just there's a system that pays for that, and there's a time and a place for that. I'm not even saying there isn't. But chronic disease, we have to get upstream and figure out where the causes are, and unfortunately insurance doesn't want to pay for that. But, you know, we look at the alternative side, and they're doing the same thing with a lot of supplements, right? They're just throwing a lot of supplements at it. And again, time and a place. I'm not against supplements. We use them. But unless you get to the cause, the interference of why the body's really not healing, you know, there lies the problem. Because the alternative doctors aren't doing it, nor the other side of the aisle. So we have a gap right now. And that's why I'm passionate about what I teach.
Well, you're right. There's an absolute gap, and I think here in our area of West Texas, there's a humongous gap, and we're trying to close that gap with shows like this. I want you to, if this is almost more for me than anything, you know, I've been reading your stuff and watching you, listening to you for 3 or 4 years now. You know, from when you first started learning the 5 R's for yourself, getting the mercury out, detoxing the right way, till today. So I don't know what year that was when you really started working on yourself, but 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, what's the biggest change or addition or something you didn't know then that you really think is a key thing now?
Yeah, there's a few. You know, I mean, I got sick in 2000, and, you know, it wasn't until probably 2003, 2004 that I started realizing what was going on. So there was a lot I've learned since that time. You know, we have advanced even on some of the binders, chelators, if you will, that we've used, one of which is called Cytodetox that works very differently than anything that we've had. You know, that's one of my big criticisms. When I talk about true cellular detox as being the real answer and real detox, there's three components. You know, number one, you have to get the cell to do what it's meant to do, and that's where the 5 R's sets in. Number two, you have to prepare downstream detox pathways, you know, your liver, your kidney, your gut, I mean, very important. The third component is these using true binders, and that's where people make a lot of mistakes. You know, Corella is a binder, but it's a weak binder. Many of these things, cilantro and a lot of these different plants, they're not real binders, and so they have the ability to hold on to certain toxins. They probably do pretty well at that. But when it comes to things like heavy metals or biotoxins from like mold or Lyme disease, doesn't do that great of a job. So real binders is the third component of true cellular detox. So, you know, a product breakthrough like Cytodetox, it's this hydrolyzed particle that has the ability to cross into the cell and even across the blood-brain barrier. That was a breakthrough. I didn't have that. We were using things like DMSA, DMPS, which are true binders, but most people use them incorrectly. They'll take them once or twice a day or do an IV. And the problem is that they can pull a lot, and then they go away very quickly, and then redistribution of the metals occurs. So using those true binders correctly, like you're taking DMSA, you have to use it every 4 hours, DMPS, you have to use it every 8 hours. They have a half-life. You can't violate it. Cytodetox, it stays around a little longer, so a lot safer to use, a lot easier to use. You don't have to take it as often. And it crosses into the cell where DMSA or DMPS doesn't. It doesn't mean those aren't good. You just have to use them correctly. But we've advanced is the point. And then we always use a fat-soluble chelator like ALA, alpha-lipoic acid, once we get to the brain phase that goes deeper. And I think we've even had some advances in that. So that's a few things that have changed. And then some of the dietary stuff, using this with some of the fasting modalities that we talk about. So, again, you put it all together, and I think we're in a position now. You know, we were getting people well back then, but today I think we can do it more efficiently without as many symptoms and even faster. So that's good news.
Yeah. Well, now, just again for the listeners, want to review real quick the cellular healing diet. Like similar diets, basically all these diets that work well are low carb, low sugar, low processed grain, and they're high in good fats, plenty of colorful vegetables. You know, there's different flours like almond flour, coconut flour. You can use it, aren't grains. That's really the core of the cellular healing, is getting your grain and sugar down, getting the bad fat out, getting the good fat in. And then taking it a step further is changing your ratios around a little bit, where you really get a high fat, moderate protein, low carb. And a step up from that is every now and then don't eat, every now and then skip a meal. Dr. Pompa, you mentioned diet variations. I have so many patients that they'll get tuned into a diet, whether it's cellular healing or ketogenic or whatever, paleo, and they'll just get locked in on it and stay there, and then a lot of times they'll end up plateauing or something will happen. So talk a little bit about your experience with that and what led you to the whole diet variation concept.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, low-carb diets are more popular. Ketosis has become more popular. We understand the benefit, and for years you and I have promoted low-carb diet. Look, the average American is eating far too many carbs. It's funny, when you look at some of these low-carb studies in America, they call 150 to 180 carbs a day, grams of carbohydrates a day, a low-carb diet. You and I would be like, well, that's kind of high carb for me, you know.
Triple
so what we call low-carb, because carbohydrate intake is so great in this country.
Yeah.
So no matter what, it's way, way too high for the average human. Genetically, we all, no doubt, can tolerate different amounts of carbohydrates, proteins, you know, in fat. You know, however, you know, way too high. All right, but let's talk about low-carb diets, right? So after a while, your body can start running very low insulin, and that can create potentially a few problems. Simply put, the body can eventually think it's starving, and it can go into a starvation mode where it starts to want to hold on to its fat. It will start to blunt insulin receptors, and I ran across some things saying low-carb diet ketosis can cause insulin resistance. It doesn't cause insulin resistance, but it will look like insulin resistance because the body will blunt that receptor only to survive. Because if it does that, it can store fat. See, if insulin starts to rise, then we will start to store some fat. And it wants to do that. Your body just wants to survive. That's it. And to adapt, it will literally slow down fat metabolism and try to store it. So that can happen if you're low carb for a long time. Also, it can even take water and put it into some of your fat cells, and you kind of get this like loose fat, cellulite-y fat, and you wonder why you keep going lower carb, lower carb, lower carb. It happened to me. I was down to like less than 10 grams of carbs a day, and I was wondering why right around my waist I was getting fatter. And then I realized that bodybuilders discovered something. Not scientific, trial and error. Meaning that if they just did these high carb days, it would actually throw them back into a fat burning mode. It worked. All it did is just remind the body it wasn't starving. And then 2 days later, you're actually leaner. So a carb load day just simply bypassed that survival mechanism.
Just 3 days ago, protesters clashed over Confederate monuments at Pioneer Park.
When you're chronically low carb,
Skylar Craig from Austin thinks it should stay.
One of insulin's
jobs. It's a part of history
is
and even
to
if it's a bad part of history, it's like something you need to remember.
Former Dallas City Council member Sandra Crenshaw says it's a link to her heritage.
And so we found out that some of the African Americans are children of the sons and daughters of the Confederate.
Another reason by throwing in a tarp day,
removing the monuments.
Actually, you know,
I call those people that are right there trying to remove the statue, I call them cowards.
And one last thing.
Dallas historian Dr. Michael Phillips was at Thursday's protest.
Dr.
Phillips wants the statues in Dallas removed and schools named for Confederate leaders
actually help you make
he's
that
collected
conversion.
Over
so
120 signatures on a petition to the Dallas City Council
well
and school board.
Well,
but Crenshaw says she's not giving up.
Variation.
It took
so
a law
stop losing weight on low
to put
diet,
those statues at Lee Park.
Diet variation is the answer.
It took a law to do
if
that.
If you can't lose
Let's
weight in that part of you know place around your belly, your thighs, whatever, diet variation is the answer. I just described weekly variation, where you take one or two high, healthy carb days a week and throw it in. But there's also monthly variation, and I'll give you one example. We will take these thyroid people, for example, or just hormone cases, and the month of their period, the week of their period seems to be the worst. So we'll take that 1 week of the month and we'll go higher healthy carbs. So maybe about 100 grams to 150, somewhere in there. And we go high carbs for that time. And the rest of the time, we'll put them either back into ketosis or just low-carb diet like the cellular healing diet. And magic happens. That variation, it creates better hormone conversion. But ultimately, the variation creates adaptation. Every time the body shifts diet, there is an adaptation that takes place from the microbiome, the bacteria in your gut changes. Hormonally, it raises growth hormone to change, to adapt. So the magic is even just switching diets. We even move people in and out of ketosis, in and out of low carbohydrate diet seasonally. So we have weekly, we have monthly, and we have seasonal variation. It's good to change your diet. Every ancient culture does because they were forced to. But today we don't, and I believe it's a mistake.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, it seems like people just want a law or a rule or list. You know, give me the law, I'll try to follow it. And it needs to be a little more, try to get to the patients to a point where it's a little more intuitive. You got to kind of listen to your body, listen to the season, yep. And just vary things up. It's all got to be clean. I mean, we need to be real food, clean, organic, and then on that lower carb end, like you said, we're all consuming just way too many. But then in there, you've got some wiggle room. So it gives really some freedom in there. I've one patient who found so much freedom in the fasting that she felt like, you know, on the weekend she could kind of splurge a little more. Now splurge for her was eating some healthier carbs and, you know, maybe some even organic ancient grains and stuff for her was splurging. But even if she splurged beyond that, she'd go out to eat at a restaurant with her husband, not feel like she was condemned to just eat a salad or whatever. But then she'd follow it with a fast. So it gave her just actually more freedom to know she could move in and out of some of these different things. So that's what I try to tell folks is this might sound complicated, but really if you understand the basic concepts, there's a lot of freedom in it.
That's right.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about, because I know this is big in your world too, the gut, leaky gut, glyphosate. You know, Dr. Zach Bush, we're going to try to get him on sometime soon. I was at a conference a couple weekends ago. I had a great visit with him. Amazing, brilliant guy. I know you've interviewed him. But talk some about the need for organic, clean food, or at the minimum, trying to put Dr. Bush's product Restore into the body to keep the tight junctions closed. You know, how important is that for you? How much do you stress that, you know, clean meats and clean vegetables? Somewhere on your priority list, where does that sit?
Well, look, I think this is a great topic. I think that most of your listeners have heard of the word gluten, whereas 5 years ago that wouldn't be the case. I think right now gluten is very in vogue. I mean, people that don't even really know what it is will go, oh, I'll just have the gluten-free. Because and somehow in their brain it instilled that it's healthier. Sometimes that could be the case. Other times the gluten-free products, like low-fat products, become more unhealthy, right? There's they're loaded with what we call super sugars, like tapioca flour, starches that raise glucose more than sugar. So gluten-free could be not so good. But let's talk about it, because it's more than just gluten, right? You mentioned leaky gut. You know, it's estimated that 95% of the American population has some form of leaky gut. You know, that means that your gut, foods are able to cross through it into your bloodstream where you make antibodies, and then hours later you don't feel so good. You don't even remember it was the meal, or maybe even the next day. So leaky gut can cause food intolerances. Leaky gut can cause autoimmune, simply symptoms you don't like. Weight gain, you name it. Leaky gut, not good. What causes it? Toxins, mostly. Pathogens, I mean, there's other causes, but, you know, for the most part, most people today have it because of the lives that we live. Here's the problem. So when we look at people today, they're detoxing. A lot of the toxins are going into the gut, crossing back in. It's called retox. When we look at leaky gut and why people don't feel well, the gut has to be dealt with. So the need to eat organic is critical. There's a chemical called glyphosate. So when I say it's not just gluten, glyphosate is the bigger issue, because you can eat gluten and go, I'm fine with it. See, if you don't have leaky gut, this protein gluten doesn't cause you problems. If you do, then it will cause you great difficulty. So what's causing the leaky gut? The number one toxin is glyphosate. Glyphosate is being sprayed on all of our food supply. If it's not 100% organic, it probably has glyphosate. 60% of the rainfall has glyphosate, so in an argument, we're not going to avoid it completely. But it opens up the tight junctions. These are these pathways, you know, in our gut that are meant to open and close, but it keeps them open. So it creates leaky gut. So therefore, then gluten becomes the problem. But nobody's focused on glyphosate. Everybody's focused on gluten. We should be avoiding the glyphosate. So Zach Bush had developed a product called Restore that, even in the presence of glyphosate, this chemical that opens up the gut, it can shut down the tight junction. So that's really important when we're detoxing. That's really important if you have autoimmune and food intolerances or symptoms you don't like. So we can use a product like Restore. And then I mentioned the Cytodetox. That's a product that actually has the ability to bind this glyphosate as well. So those two products, I think, are real big game changers with today's toxicity, because this glyphosate's in all the food we're eating. So, yeah, eat 100% organic, but these products will help too.
Yeah. Well, what's your current standing, you know, through your research and probably more importantly, just your clinical experience with your clients, where do you stand right now on the microbiome as far as trying to repopulate, you know, with the probiotic, fermented food, the Restore? I know Dr. Bush talks about, you know, he's not really for probiotics, not anti-probiotics, but he sees very limited benefit because they're from cows and they don't actually colonize in the gut. They may drop some inflammation. There can be some short-term benefit. But what's your take and what do you see with your clients?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with them. When you look at the four products that everybody's on when they come see us, right, probiotics, one of the four. And I would say the four products that most people are on are all pretty useless. I think when you get on a probiotic, it can give you some benefit in the beginning, but it's very limited. I think, you know, fermented foods is a much better way to get unique bacteria. You know, we just stop fermenting things in today's day and age because of refrigeration. So I think getting back to some fermented foods is important. There's certain bacteria that you just need to, you can't add in even from a fermented food. So prebiotics is a key, right? So where we take, you know, we're not getting enough good quality fibers in our diet to feed good bacteria. So that's a key. A product like the Restore, Bush's product, is a redox polymer. There's no bacteria in it. It just helps the communication between your bacteria and your cell. So redox is a signal. It's a communication signaler that helps this communication. So it's kind of like you can have plenty of armies, but if they don't have walkie-talkies to communicate, they're going to lose. So you're adding the communication ability into the bacteria. So then when we start making some of these other changes, adding good fibers, some fermented food, now these efforts actually can start to stick because it gives our good bacteria a chance to communicate and overtake the bad guys.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, all of these things. Now, look, the real way I fix the gut is through what I call my ancient healing strategies. And, you know, that is these diet changes, using diet variation, emulating feast-famine cycles. So when you go with food, without food, we know that it changes the microbiome. And forcing that adaptation is part of the key to fixing the gut.
One other thing I want to get from you. Again, this we're getting to the towards the end of the show, so I'm trying to pepper you with some questions I always get from patients. Probably the answer somewhere in the middle is what I tell patients on this. The whole debate between a plant-based essential fats versus animal-based, you know, fish oil versus flaxseed kind of debate. What's your take on that?
Oh, boy. Well, my take may be different than the answer, you know, you're looking for or think. I'm a believer in fats the way they are in nature. For example, vegetable oils are one of the most damaging oils at the cellular level. You know, it takes, on average, 102 days to get rid of these things out of cell membranes. You know, they're so inflammatory, causing it. Now, I have no problem with vegetable oil when it's in vegetables, but it's a polyunsaturated, very fragile fat. When you take it out of vegetable oils, it's rancid. It becomes a poison to our cells. Well, fish oil is the same way. I mean, I love fish oil when it's in fish. So I eat my sardines and, you know, I get all my good DHAs from those natural sources. I'm not saying a fish oil doesn't necessarily, you know, could be handled properly, not be rancid. But the other problem is when you take the fish oil out of the fish, you're losing a lot of other really important fats that balance the DHA in the ratios with antioxidants, certain protective enzymes. I mean, I can go down the list. Because the fish oil, like the vegetable oil, is very fragile, you know, that it has a lot of protective mechanisms, you know, with it inside the fish. So I'm a believer in getting those things from the food. And again, I'm not even opposed in a short term coming in with, you know, a high amount of fish oil or DHA if it's not rancid. But again, you can throw yourself out of balance. We're seeing something for the first time in a long time in the human race, if it ever. We're seeing omega-3 dominance. So whereas we would see omega-6 dominance because people are eating grain-fed everything, corn, all this omega-6, which is not good, right? Too much. We still need omega-6, but too much is not good. But what we're finding is the same with omega-3. So the healthy population, perhaps our listeners, right, they're taking all this fish oil and they're becoming omega-3 dominant,
right,
which is one example. There's a fat in the mitochondrial membrane called cardiolipin. Omega-3 dominance can release that fat, and the omega-3 replaces it, and it causes problems. So, you know, we see that. We see that in the autistic community where they put their kid on fish oil, they saw a benefit, less stimming, and then all of a sudden, 6 months, a year later, they're seeing increased in symptoms like stimming, and they would never correlate it with the fish oil because they thought that helped. But what happened was is they went outside of a normal ratio, and they became omega-3 dominant. So we're starting to see that now. So the key is in nature there's certain ratios, there's certain balance, there's certain enzymes, protection. I mean, it's there, and it's very hard to duplicate. So you can use a fish oil for a short period of time, but most of our people are staying on it and creating, you know, perhaps new problems.
Yeah.
So I believe in a balance of vegetable fats that are protected quality, you know, fats that we get in nature, or that's from an avocado, a nut, and I believe in meat fats, grass-fed meat, quality fat there with arachidonic acid and all these other good fats, omega-6, omega-3, omega-9, everything. We need it all. But getting it in the right ratios is key.
Right. No, I'm in agreement 100%, and And that's kind of the funny part of all this, is I went from conventional medicine to integrative and started trying to learn this wealth of knowledge from all these practitioners around the world. And you, like you already alluded to, in the alternative world, using all these different supplements and techniques. And now the further I go, the more I see, well, it's actually more simple. And God already got it right the first time. You know, the ratios in the food are there, and we need to consume as much of this just as real food. You know, supplements are supplemental to healthy food, and the more you get that healthy food, you get everything in the right ratios. But what I'm finding is there's just a lack of minerals in the food. But that's a whole other story too, probably another show. You know, you start supplementing with minerals, well, they've got to be in balance. So, I mean, one mineral affects another mineral in that mineral wheel where everything interacts. So there's a lot of complexity there where really ultimately we've got to heal the soil. We've got to grow food in healthy soil, then consume that food fresh, local grown. And that's where the ultimate health will come. And it's, I think, tough to supplement. Definitely targeted supplementation, like your detox protocols, for sure. You know, we can manipulate the biochemistry to a degree to reach certain goals. But ultimately, when you see someone reach that health, they're doing some diet variation, they're doing the ancient healing strategies, where do you come in with supplements in general? I mean, do you have everybody, you know, say like on vitamin D or kind of the normal ones people think of, or do you feel like people can get to a point and get enough sunshine, get enough minerals in the food and not need supplements?
Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, you said it best, you target these supplements, you know, you're using it as a tool, right? I mean, I think when we look at, there's probably five big deficiencies today. I think there's an over-focus on the micronutrient as causing disease as opposed to the macronutrient, meaning proteins, fats, carbohydrates, right? We talked about the overconsumption of carbohydrates. We haven't talked about the overconsumption of protein, but, you know, I think people are ignoring that and thinking that they're sick because they lack something. Typically, it's not the case, but I'm in agreement. There's some major deficiencies, you know, especially, you know, in that mineral world. Magnesium's one, right? I feel like there's a massive need for magnesium. I feel like we don't get enough because people do eat processed, depleted foods and depleted soil. Iodine, I mean, it's virtually non-existent. Yeah. You add the fact that we have an explosion of thyroid conditions. People are getting exposed to heavy metals, which bind to those thyroid receptors. Big problem, you know, and yet they don't have certain minerals, you know, that they need. Iodine being one of them. So magnesium, iodine. Here's a surprise. Vitamin K, too, right? We think about the need for vitamin D, which, you know, that's one of the vitamins, too. But K2 is another vitamin needed to absorb and utilize calcium. Why are people so deficient? Because we grass-fed nothing. And you get K2 from the cow because the grass has it, and then the cow eats the grass, and, of course, then we end up with the K2. And if you're not getting grass-fed butters and meats, you're not getting enough K2. So very important. And then that was the third one, vitamin D we spoke about. I think that, you know, vitamin D, here's another issue that I see. You know, vitamin D is another one that everyone comes in our offices with, right, on. Problem is when you take vitamin D without K2, or if you already have a K2 deficiency, without vitamin A, you create what is called a functional deficiency, meaning if you go home and look at your bottle, or if you're at home, look at it right now. It's just vitamin D3 without K2, without vitamin A or E, it's unbalanced, and it will create a functional deficiency. And let me explain what that is. You take more vitamin D, and the vitamin D, K2, vitamin A, and E, they're all fat solubles. They all bind to the same receptors. So therefore, if you're already lacking K2 or maybe vitamin A, you're taking vitamin D and it's blocking the receptor to the K2. So that's called a functional deficiency. So you actually lack more K2 or vitamin A. So when you look at some of the research, you know, years ago, they said, well, vitamin D, taking vitamin D can cause hip fractures. Well, no, vitamin D doesn't do it. The excess vitamin D, it's creating a functional deficiency, which is causing a K2 deficiency, which led to the hip fractures. Or extra vitamin D, doctors said, can cause cancer. Well, again, it wasn't the extra vitamin D. It was blocking vitamin A and creating a vitamin A deficiency, which led to the cancer. So yeah. You have to take it in balance if you're going to take it.
Yeah.
So those four, I think I missed one. Did I say four or five? I don't even know, Doc. I got lost in the darn vitamin D thing.
Well, that was really good. And unfortunately, we're out of time. We keep going all day. But I want to encourage all the listeners to go to drpompa.com. That's drpompa.com. And from there, you can get a wealth of information, free e-books. You can get the Cellular Healing Diet book. You can get lots of articles, videos, links to his Cellular Healing TV program, which is a weekly program where he interviews lots of interesting guests. So just a whole lot of knowledge there on drpompa.com. So, Dr. Pompa, thanks a lot for joining us today. We sure appreciate you spending an hour with us and hope to talk to you again.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.